We said indefinite, just so I didn't have to keep answering your questions every day.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I'm the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, of course, as always, at redrock_Beeble. We're going to talk about all 10 games from Wednesday. We're going to preview a 4-game Thursday and we're going to head back to Utah with the player spotlight and look at their starting point guard, and that is ravishing Rick Rubio in the latter portion of the show. So
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. Just if you are watching this on YouTube, you'll see an updated look, some updated graphics, thanks to Scott Bloom for helping out with the design stuff on the show. There'll be a few little kinks to work out because there's a few different things just in terms of the way the show graphics are going to process. So hopefully that all gets ironed out in today's and tomorrow's show. So there might be a few little weird things happening with the graphics, and I do apologize for that. But just to freshen up the look a little bit, let me know what you think about the change in the graphical stuff on the show today. Let's start off, as we always do, with the monstrous line of the night, and we're going with Hassan Whiteside for today's monster. 27 points for Whiteside, 13 rebounds, he had 6 blocks, and he was 10 of 12 from the field and 7 of 9 from the line. I've been talking about how concerned I was, I guess, with Whiteside's playing time. It hasn't really impacted his production too much. And in fact, over the last 2 weeks, despite playing only 26 minutes per night, he is the 17th ranked player in those 7 games, averaging 15 and 11 with 3.4 blocks. But in true Whiteside fashion, he is at 0.6 assists, 0.3 steals. He hits no threes. He's really, you know, only providing value in those big categories. And he's giving you a ton of stuff, a ton of blocks, big field goal percentage, actually hitting his free throws at 85% over the last 7 games. He's up at 73 this year, so seems to have got that figured out. But he is a head-to-head league dream just because of his ability to help in those areas. Now, I still worry about the minutes. He played considerably more minutes in this game than he had in any of the previous, 10, 12, 20 games. It's probably his biggest run since at least he came back from injury. And then even before that injury, his 5 games before he missed, he hadn't crossed 30 minutes in any of those. So this is a welcome return. But it's also the fifth double-double in his last 6 games. So he's still been able to put up decent numbers. Just expecting him to go back to the 33 minutes a night that he played last season, I don't think that was realistic, and I still don't think it is. But if he can go back to that really high-level shot blocking that we saw from him a couple of seasons ago, then his value is going to remain quite similar, if not exceed what he did last season. But I still, there's a little bit of doubt in whether he can continue blocking shots at 3.5 per game, and that will likely dip, and that will then push his ranking back outside the top 30, outside the top 40. But it's something for us to pay attention to with an increase over that last period, as he is, I guess, working more on the shot blocks rather than the big minutes. So that is something for us to pay some attention to as we move forward. The waiver wire line of the night, the young gun of the night, it's the same bloke. It is my mate, Bogdan Bogdanovic of the Sacramento Kings. This man is the Kings' best player. I'll continue to say that. He was fantastic in this game. 25-6-2. He hit 6 triples. He had a steal. He was 9 of 11 from the field, and he hit his only free throw. He is now the 115th ranked player for the season. But over the last month, in under 30 minutes a game, he's the 78th ranked guy. And to me, he is a dead set lock for the top 100 for the rest of the season. He is a must-own player, and he is owned in like 15% of leagues. It is bananas. I player spotlighted him at the start of the week or the end of last week. I don't remember. He is a must-own player. You need to own him. That's what must-own means. Go and have a look on your waiver wire. His minutes are only going to increase. His production is only going to increase. Maybe his efficiency drops because he's at 54% over the past 15 games and 50% from three. So, in fact, that will definitely drop. But the assist numbers are rising. He can get you a steal a game. He can hit 2.5 threes a game. He can score. He's doing so much for this team, and he is going to continue to get better. And a top 50 post All-Star run is definitely not out of the realms of possibility for Big BB8. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Yeah, Serge Ibaka, decidedly not hot at the moment. 2 points and 3 rebounds for Serge with 1 assist. went blockless, went steelless, was 1 of 5 from the field. And after a piss-poor start to the season where he looked terrible, and then he really started to get it back going again and has dropped off again considerably over the last 2 weeks. He's outside the top 120, and his last 3 games have been an exercise in futility, playing only 23 minutes, 8.7 points with 4 rebounds, no blocks in that time, and his shooting is well down over the last month at 44%. He's not someone that I'm looking to drop. I don't think that we're ever going to see top 20, top 30 Serge Ibaka that we saw from 4 or 5 years ago in Oklahoma City. That ship has sailed. He is a back-end guy that can provide you with a level of blocks. I mean, this is a guy that was blocking, you know, 2.5-3 shots a game. Now he's at 1.5 per game. And the lack of his rebounding, the lack of his steals, the zero assists that he gets, it really does keep him from ever pushing back up the top. And this is sort of who he is at this point. You just got to hold on through it and hope no more of these turds get dished up. Because if they continue to go like at this level over the next couple of games, he is going to be a hard guy to continue to hold. But I'm not panicking at this point. Just as, these are the sort of performances you expect from guys who are on the back end of your roster, which exactly how you should be viewing Serge Ibaka. All right, it is time for question time of the day, and today's question comes from Shaggy Fan, who's on Twitter at Rasklot Films, and he says, I was watching basketball with a bunch of girls last night, high five to you, and no one could agree. Who is the handsomest, hottest, most attractive player in the NBA? And I thought about this question a lot, probably more than I should have, and there are a lot of good answers. How many guys did I narrow it down to? Probably should have counted this out. I've got 9 guys on my list here, and I'll go through my short list of players of who I think is are the most attractive players in the NBA. Ravishing Rick Rubio, Steven Adams, Kyrie Irving, Jabari Parker, Jim Butler, Chandler Parsons, Dwayne Wade, Corey Joseph, and Tyson Chandler was the list that I came about as my hottest. I'm sure I'm missing someone. So if there's someone else who really gets your man loins shaking, let me know. But out of that group, I'd go Rubio. Still, I enjoy his hair, I enjoy his beard, I enjoy his general sexiness, I enjoy his arm sleeve tattoo. I think that he is the most attractive player in the NBA, but the arguments could easily be made for any of those other guys. And there's, again, plenty of people who I'm sure are missing. And all female listeners to this show, what's your choice? Because there are going to be plenty of guys listening to this, mate. I don't think any of them attractive. What are you talking about? I'm a bloke, mate. As long as if they got tits, then I'll like it. So the girls who are listening to this, who do you think is the most attractive? And the blokes who have no problem with saying, you know what, that's a good looking bloke over there, and that's exactly what I think these guys are. Let me know, and let me reply to our Shaggy Fan. Let him know as well who you think is the most attractive player in the NBA. All right, let's move in now and talk about these games in a bit more detail. We are going to go through all 10 games, of course. That's the best way for us to do that, as we always do. The first one of those games is the Washington Wizards and the Charlotte Hornets. Just an absolute ass-kicking here from the Hornets on the Wizards. So minutes were reduced all over the place. Scott Brooks was not a happy man at the end of this game, and he intimated or flat-out said that there are going to be some changes coming. Now, what that change is, I'm not sure, but Markieff Morris played only 15 minutes and Marcin Gortat was under 20. So you'd have to assume there is something brewing there. I would guess that Kelly Oubre comes in, maybe pushing Otto Porter to the fore, and you see more minutes from Oubre, who had 16 points in 27 minutes here and was one of the better players. So if you are looking in a 12-team league and you've got a superfluous roster spot, maybe Oubre might be a guy just to sneak in there, because if he plays 32 or 33 a night and Morris is reduced to a 20-minute role, it could be interesting. The other guy you could look for is Mike Scott, who had 18 points in 25 minutes, but as is always the case with Scott, not much else came with it, and it comes on hot shooting, 7 of 10 from the field. So when the shot doesn't fall, he's that classic guy that he gives you nothing else. So he is a hard guy to sort of pin down. But Oubre can produce in multiple different areas, and this could be an interesting spot. So Scott is a guy you look in the deeper leagues. Oubre for even 12s, probably 14s more likely. My boy Thomas Satoransky, 6-3-7 in 26, not 26 minutes, 26 minutes for him. He is a bloke who I think can fill a Dillon Wright role at some point, playing the 1, the 2, and the 3 in a consistent 25 minutes per night. That's how I view him. I think he can be a low-end starter for some teams and can be a high-end sixth man playing that role. And that could lead him at some point in the next 2 years to become a standard league fantasy guy. It's not going to happen this year, but he's shown significant strides this year and significant flashes. As for Morris, I don't think he's a 12-team guy to own. And you know that I don't think that about Gortat, who was scoreless and had 8 boards in his 20 minutes. For the Hornets, again, they laid the smack down here. Marvin Williams only played 22 minutes because he didn't have to play more, but still shot the ball well. 12 points with 3 triples, absolutely fine as a 12-team league guy. Kemba had 19, 3, and 7 with 2 blocks, while Dwight Howard, 18 and 15, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 4 or 5 from the line, and hit the 2 free throws off a couple of techs after Timmy Frazier and Michael Carter-Williams were rejected in that sort of passage of play after the Wizards nominated him to take the free throws. He went out there and knocked them both down and blew kisses to the crowd, which was fantastic. Nick Batum, 11-3-4. That's solid-ish. I still think that he should be owned, even though he has been, I guess, a bit underwhelming. Well, Jezza Lamb, 16 points in 21 minutes. Nice, but 7 of 9 shooting. Not a realistic 12. I would rather, if I had Lamb on my roster, I would drop him and I would add a guy like Oubre, as I mentioned earlier. The next game we take a look at, the San Antonio Spurs and the Brooklyn Nets. The news out today that Kawhi Leonard is out indefinitely. You're all going to want to hear what I have to say about this. There's plenty of things going around, and I've spoken to many people through the Reddit AMA that I did today across on Basketball Monster on Twitter. Indefinite doesn't mean out for the season. In fact, Greg Popovich was asked that today, and he went to great pains to say, no, it's not that indefinite. He will play again this season. Indefinite just means there is no set timetable, very much like the start of the season. And I think the Spurs rest stuff and the Spurs sneakiness stuff is really overblown. I don't think that they have been disingenuous. I don't think that they've been hiding stuff at all with this injury. They've been fairly honest. Like, the injury came in, they didn't think it was too bad, and it just never responded the way that they thought. I can't really think of any instances in the past where the Spurs have been consistently lying and hiding things. They have player welfare, one of the tops of their lists of things to do in terms of looking after their guys and managing them properly, but I don't think there's been anything nefarious about them hiding stuff and lying to everybody. They generally put out information way earlier than most other teams, generally. Now, everyone has an occasional what are you doing sort of moment, but I don't think this is a pattern. For some reason, it's Pop, man, rest everyone all the time and they're always lying and hiding things. That's just not what they do. I that is not something that has ever resonated to me. As for Leonard, he was starting to look good. He was starting to go along fine. But, yeah, the recovery just wasn't what they wanted. So he wasn't getting better after games. He was still on this two-day rest program after each game and it wasn't improving. So I said, well, yeah, what their medical staff, and some teams have horrendous medical staffs. This team has got a great training staff, a great medical staff, and they said, well, the best thing is we just got to let him rest it up and try and recuperate over the next couple of weeks. I think my best guess is post All-Star for Kawhi, and that gives Kyle Anderson some value in 12-team leagues, but he's not a must-own guy. He's not going to be breaking through and blowing everyone up. Yeah, Dan Green's an interesting guy as well, but again, these are guys who might have top 100 value for 3 weeks. Not guys who are going to be guaranteed top 50 numbers in that time or top 70 or anything along those lines. And you saw it today. Anderson played only 22 minutes. Green had 9 points in 27 with 3 steals and a block, which is where his value comes from. But they're not must-own guys. But what it does do is it solidifies LaMarcus Aldridge, who had 34 and 8 with 2 blocks. He's going to continue putting up big numbers. While Pat Mills took advantage of the fact that guards go off against the Nets. He had 25 with 7 triples and 3 steals. Do not buy into that as a continuing thing. All 7 of his field goal makes were threes in this game. Tone Parker, 8, 3, and 2. And Davis Bertans played the 22 minutes, so he'll get a little bit of a bump. But again, he's not a 12-teamer. He's probably not a 14-team league guy either. On to the Brooklyn Nets. It wasn't a great night for Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Just the 19 minutes, 7-4. He will be better than that. Jahlil Okafor, 4-4 in 13 minutes. Just this is what you expect from Okafor. This is it now. No 12, no 14, probably no 16-team league value. Damari Carroll's a 12-team league guy. They were 11-10 in 34. While Spencer Dinwiddie, horrible shooting, 9 points, 13 assists and 2 steals, but he was 3 of 13 from the field with his shooting, which is clearly terrible. He has shown some poor shooting numbers recently, and I really do worry about what's going to happen when D'Angelo Russell comes back. There's the chance that they can play together and he plays 27 a night, but I think probably a more realistic expectation is he goes to 23-22, and that could almost eliminate his standard league value, but we'll see. Not dropping him yet, but it's a possibility. The Blue Swimmer was strong, 20-8 with 4 triples there. Playing a lot better recently, absolutely fine to grab him and see what happens in a 12-team league guy, but not a must-own guy or not a guy that you hold on to under all circumstances. Well, Jumpin' Joe Harris, he had 32, minutes, 18 points with four triples, and one of those many, many players who you can stream in for three-pointers across the league now. Well, and that's why focusing on three-point shooting in drafts is becoming less and less of a priority of mine. The New Orleans Pelicans, that's a terrible loss to lose this one to the Hawks. Tone Davis, after a couple of just monster games, was non-existent. 8 points on only eight shots. That is just bad to see him get only eight shots. Seven boards of steal and two blocks. This is chalk this one up to a back-to-back and a real sense of weirdness. Boogie had 19, 14, and 7 with two blocks. Well, Drew Holiday's massive year continues. His shooting is out of control. 22, 4, and 4 on 56%. I keep thinking that a regression is going to come, but we're 40-plus games into the season, and Holiday is just thriving in this role. Weirdly, when Cousins arrived last year, he shot like 20% in about the first eight games and couldn't find any sort of shot or any sort of rhythm. And it was counterintuitive. Oh, with other good players here, he should get more open looks, you know, less at defensive attention, and it didn't make sense. This year, the common sense is coming through, and we're seeing him get the better shots. And look, he looks fantastic. And while I think there might be a level of regression, I don't think it should be that harsh. Rajon Rondo is bad. 17 minutes, 3 points and 6 assists. His minutes are all over the place, but that's now 4 consecutive games that Ian Clark has played more minutes than Rajon Rondo, and that's a telling number. Rondo has 17 here, Clark had 25 and 8 points. Now, Clark's not a guy to add, but if Rondo's playing under 20 minutes a night, he's a tough guy to own. In a 10-team league, I would move on. In a 12-team league, I guess it depends on who I'm looking to add, but this current pattern of minutes is a real, real tough one for Rondo. I'm a little bit stubborn a lot of the time, so I'd probably still hold, but he's not good. We're seeing that. The Pelicans are seeing that, and it's causing his minutes to come down. Darius Miller had 17 points on 7 of 9 shooting, and Etuan Moore had 12 on 5 of 8 shooting, but Miller's a guy that you just class in that Jumpin' Joe Harris category, and there's plenty of guys who are in action today doing that who you can stream in for threes, and that's about it. For the Hawks, Dennis Schroeder, big game from him, 13, 3, and 15. The 4 of 16 shooting doesn't help, but there's some nice assists. While the Baptist, John Collins, 26 minutes, 18 points, 5 rebounds, 1 block. The best thing there is 26 minutes for him. I'm super pumped. I didn't recommend dropping him at any point through that weird lean patch. I think it's only going to get better for him. And when he gets to 30 minutes, he will be a top 40 type player. He might not get to top 40, but I think he's got that chance. And I would make sure he is owned in my league. Kent Bazemore, another strong night. 20 points with 5 assists. While Ilias Sova, at some point his value is going to disappear. There's no doubt about that. But for now, he's worth owning. 15 and 7 with 3 triples. The Undertaker had 4 and 10 in his 20, while Torian Prince, just a shit game. Third consecutive terrible performance. 7 points, 1 rebound, and 1 assist. But we saw this sort of crap go on with Tim Hardaway at the start of the season, where the minutes were there, but the shots just weren't falling, or the attempts were down, and it didn't make a lot of sense. And that's sort of what the artist formerly known as Torian Prince is going through. Only 9 shots, but 36 minutes. I am still holding him in the majority of cases. Now, someone did tweet me this today. Would you drop the artist formerly known as Prince for Bogdan Bogdanovic? And I would. But that's because Bogdanovic needs to be owned in all leagues. And I think he's got a higher upside than what Prince does. But in most cases, I'm not dropping Prince unless there's someone like Bogdanovic available. The next game we take a look at, the Detroit Pistons and the Toronto Raptors. Andre Drummond was huge. 25 and 17, 4 steals, 80% from the field. That's what we like to see. Luke Kennard, he was ruled available to play but then didn't see the court, so you have to think that there was still some sort of issue there while Stan Johnson was out. That meant that Langston Galloway was back. 11 points, 4 steals and 3 triples. I'm not sure that that's going to keep him in the rotation each night, but it is something to pay attention to us. And as is Avery Bradley, who is traveling to Philadelphia on Thursday to have another look with a groin specialist, another injection in his groin. He doesn't think it's anything too serious, but of course, if you're traveling in between games to different cities to get groin specialists to look at it, then there's going to be some missed time at some point in the future, I would guess. He had 19 points on 19 shots and not a lot else. He's still a 12-team league guy, but probably not a 10-teamer. Reggie Bullock, 2 points in 24 minutes. He is not a must-own player. While Ish Smith, 3, 5, and 5, a horrible shooting night, 1 of 12, because he is not a good shooter. He had been putting up some good numbers, but the reality strikes back at some point, and here it is. But he's still a guy to own. Dwight Bikes dished out 6 assists in his 17 minutes. Tone Tolliver started the second half over Reggie Bullock, and he's another guy who you stream in for threes. He hit 3 triples for his 9 points in 29 minutes. Gives you very little else, but the fact is that he can get you 2 to 3 threes a night in a considerable role. For the Raptors, Jonas Valanciunas weirdly always does well and always gets minutes against Detroit, 17 and 16 in 27 minutes here. We know that if he gets minutes, he'll put up numbers. But we're talking 2 games ago, he played 14 minutes. Predicting what's going to happen with his minutes is quite a tough ask. 23 and over, he's a guy you own in 12-team leagues. 18 a night, pretty tough. Which ones are going to be on a nightly basis? That's the real tough part with Valanciunas, is working out what on earth Dwayne Casey is going to do, how he is going to do. Because it's not like Valanciunas is playing bad. Like, that's the thing that's frustrating. He's not playing bad. But he is the 64th ranked player over the last 2 weeks in 22 minutes. He's 112th over the season in 21 minutes. So that makes you think, yeah, you know what? I probably should own him. And there'll be some ups, there'll be some downs. But majority of the time, they're ups. Kyle Lowry, 18, 9, and 5. Or DeLon Wright played 24 minutes, only scored 4, but added 5 assists, added 2 blocks, and his ability to contribute in those other areas is what makes him a useful hold. DeRozan had 17 with 5 assists. Norm Powell was back in the rotation with Freddie Van Vliet out, while the Jedi is just not doing anything fantasy-wise. 2 points for OG Anunoby, but another block. So the blocks are starting to come, which they were pretty big for him in college, just haven't really shown that so far in the NBA. The next game we look at, the New York Knicks and the Memphis Grizzlies.
Percentages.
Yeah, he was big. 21 points for Kristaps, 2 threes, 9 rebounds, but it's the defensive numbers that we love here. Just narrowly missed the monstrous line of the night. 3 steals and 6 blocks for Kristaps. And Enes Kanter got 20 points in 27 minutes, had 9 boards and a block. His inconsistency, or his playing time inconsistency, is frustrating. Timmy Hardaway Jr. returned after that rest, played off the bench, I don't know why, and only 26 minutes, I don't know why. 16 and 4 in 26 there for Timmy, played 32 the last time he was playing. He is, of course, a must-own guy and will return to that starting lineup pretty soon because Lance Thomas is not good. He had 0 points in 15. Now, Mick Beasley got a reprieve with Hardaway's minutes being reduced. He played 24 and had 18 and 7 with 3 blocks, but Beasley is not going to be a 12-team league guy in a week's time. Probably, I would be really happy with dropping him now. Courtney Lee, 18 in 35 minutes. And I said yesterday, or the day before, I don't know what day it was, talking about Frank Ntilikina. Loved what he did. Almost got that triple-double block shots. And I said, I have zero faith in what Jeff Hornacek is going to do, because we've seen it multiple times before, that when Ntilikina, you know, shows and plays well in big minutes and the Knicks play well, then he goes back and puts him under 20 minutes. Now, Hornacek comes out today and says, look, the focus of this season is still development. It's not playoffs. It's still development. Well, if the focus of this season is still development, play your lottery draft pick point guard who's playing well instead of 28 minutes for Jarrett Jack. That would be development. You could also flip it the other way and say, well, if you're actually playing for the playoffs, play Ntilikina as well, because he's playing well. So none of this shit makes sense. The rotational decisions that Hornacek makes are terrible, and he is a very, very bad coach. Frank had 7 assists still. He had a steal. So if you did add him, that's obviously, yeah, still useful, but 0 of 6 from the field is not ideal. The just jerking around, the back and forth, is going to be a tough sell to stash him unless you're in a super strong position. I see lots of people, man, I'm just going to stash Kylo Quinn in case he gets traded. I just don't see it happening. I don't see him getting traded. I don't see him going to this great situation where he's going to play 26 minutes a night. I don't see it. And I love what O'Quinn can do. I think he's a useful player. I think he's a great fantasy player. But I don't see it in terms of stashability. That's not for me. The Grizzlies, Tyreke Evans, big again, 23, 6, and 10. Marc Gasol was out of this game, so Deontay Davis started. He only had 8 and 4 and didn't block a shot. I was intrigued to see what he can do, and the answer was not too much. Ivan Rabb got in as well, 8 points in 14 minutes for Rabby, because Gasol and Brandon Wright were both out. Jamichael Green had a nice double-double, 18 and 13 with 3 triples, and if you want to add him in 12-team leagues, fine. I just don't think that he is a realistic guy to be a consistent top 100, top 120 sort of guy. Dylan Brooks strung together his second consecutive strong game, 17 points with 5 rebounds, 2 steals and 3 triples. That's a career high in scoring for Brooksy, I believe. Still just looking at him as deeper league fodder. While Jarrell Martin played the most minutes of the bigs, 31 for him, 17 and 6 with a triple one. And his resurrection this season has been one of the big surprises, one of the most underrated surprises, I guess, of the season. Goes from getting cut to starting, playing big minutes, or playing considerable bench minutes, and being probably the best of their big men outside of Marc Gasol. Andy Harrison had an issue with his shoulder. He went to the locker room. He's not impacting fantasy value really anywhere. And I don't know why Kobe Simmons is out of the rotation. Hopefully he gets back in there soon, because he is better than Mario Chalmers. The next game, the Miami Heat and the Milwaukee Bucks. Joshy Richardson continues to be good, 14-6-3 with two steals. Tyler Johnson was out. Apparently, he's going for a second opinion in New York on his ankle. The Heat don't think there's going to be anything that changes in that situation, but it is something to watch out for. With him out, Derek Jones Jr. started, and he is one of the worst fantasy players out there. 5 points in 22 minutes. 30-team league, sure. That's really about it. Well, Justice Winslow played 27 minutes, had 6 points with two triples and three assists. I don't care if Johnson's out. I wouldn't be adding Winslow in 12-teamers. I would add the Duke. He had 11-5-4 with three triples in 28 minutes. Well, the Iron Shoulder, Goran Dragic, had 15-4-5. The centers, with Whiteside playing 32, we had 19 only for Bam Adebayo and 16 minutes there for Kelly Olynyk, and it is going to be really tough to own either of those guys in 12-team leagues. Olynyk's the guy that I would own over Bam, but it's going to be tough. Well, Jimmy Johnson not making us as proud this season, 9-7-6. So the peripheral numbers are still okay, and I still believe that he is a guy to own over Olynyk and definitely over Adebayo in 12-team leagues. For Milwaukee, Jason Kidd, just one of the worst coaches going around, just continually throwing out bullshit excuses. Oh, we're young, man. The expectations were too high. That is an absolutely nonsensical statement to make for a team that's not that young. And who goes out there and just, oh yeah, expectations are too high on us? Make your players accountable. Oh yeah, players are playing selfish. Fix it. You're the coach. You are a terrible coach. You have terrible statements. You have terrible game plans, and you need to go. You are bad. Chris Middleton had 25 in 41 minutes with 5 rebounds and 3 triples. So it's a strong bounce back after a couple of poor performances. Well, Yanni, 22-10-6, and he had the Richie.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
2 steals, 2 blocks, and 2 triples. While the Muppet John Henson had a double-double in his 33 minutes, and I think that he should be owned in more leagues than he is. He is a 12-team league guy to me. Eric Bledsoe struggled against the Heat, could not find his shot, 2 of 13, 11-3-5 there, while Tone Snell got some increased minutes, hit 4 triples for 12 points on. This is what Tone Snell will do. He'll have these games, you go, oh, Tone Snell, 4 triples, 12 points, but it comes on 4 of 5 shooting. So the fact that he just hit his shots at an unsustainably high rate does very little else and will continue to do very little else. Brogo down to the 29 minutes, but still a decently strong hold in all leagues. The Lakers and the Oklahoma City Thunder, man, Jesus, this is just bad. The Lakers were already without Lonzo Ball. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope then suffered an Achilles strain, so he was out for the game. Kyle Kuzma suffered a left finger sprain. He was out for the game. Now, both of the old Brandon Ingram hurt his ankle late as well. All of those guys are fairly confident on their injuries. Ingram's almost definitely going to play in the next game, and KCP and Kuzma think there's a decent chance that they'll be in that next game. But man, that's a real tough break for those guys, both being out of that game, and they got their pants pulled down by the Thunder. With KCP out, Joshy Hart, actually, Josh the Hitman Hart. Yes, Joshy the Hitman Hart, he had 9 points with 3 triples, 2 steals, but when everyone is healthy, he just isn't going to get enough minutes to be a standard league type guy, as much as I like him. But if Caldwell Pope misses a game, then he becomes an excellent streamer. Larry Nance Jr., he dropped off after a couple of, well, actually, he went good game, bad game, good game, and now back to bad game. 6-6 and 2 steals, fine for 12-team leagues, but not a must-own. While Julius Randle, only 23 minutes in another dick move by Luke Walton. 16 points with 3 assists. You know, needs to be still held, but he's going to be up and down all the time. Brook Lopez, everyone, that's such a common question on the AMA. Got it. You know, is Brook Lopez going to, what chance is he going to get back to his old self? It's zero. I think there's less than 1% chance he gets traded. And if he doesn't get traded, he's not changing. He's not going back to 30 minutes for this team. This is just his role. He had 5 points in 17 minutes. I'd be more than happy to cut bait with him in any format that was shallower than 14-team league. Tyler Ennis started for Lonzo, had 9-3-3 in 20 minutes, while Jordy Clarkson remained putrid, 5-5 in 21 minutes. Onto the Thunder, Melo, who is actually playing quite well at the moment, 27 points with 4 triples. Steve-O Adams had 21-10, and Westbrook 19-6-7, and Paulie George just struggled with the shot, 13-5-3. It's just sort of more of the same from all of these guys. Andre Robertson, Actually, Westbrook's free throws, shit again, so we'll just keep going with that. Andre Robertson played 17 minutes. He had 4 and 4, 3 steals and a block, but he's back. Now, last time he came back from the knee injury, we saw his minutes ramp up quite slowly, so there is going to still be some sort of role for Terry Ferguson, but it's not going to have any real impact on any fantasy league. Well, Robertson provided the defense here, 3 steals and a block, but yeah, I think we'll wait a week or two before he gets back up to that 30-minute zone where he can become a useful guy just for those defensive numbers alone. The Golden State Warriors and the Chicago Bulls, just a weird game, a sloppy game. Draymond was out, so Jordan Bell got the start, as I suggested yesterday. As soon as Draymond was listed questionable, there was almost no chance he was going to play, and Kerr was going to go with Jordan Bell at starting power forward. It happened, and Bell lasted 24 seconds before suffering an ankle sprain. Now, it looked horrendous. He had to be carted off the court. X-rays were negative, and he's going to get an MRI Thursday. There is almost no doubt that he is going to miss some time. How much of it, I'm not sure. He's in a walking boot. If I had to guess at this point, which I don't, but I will anyway, I would guess that he is out 2 weeks. But he was not a guy that I'd still be... And if you are still holding him in 12, you just get rid of him now. I still like his dynasty long-term value, as I've stated many times, but it's not going to be an impact guy, and he's going to miss time here. Zaza played a few extra minutes with Bell out, 6-11 and 5, while Kevon Looney played 30 and had 2 and 4, so hardly a guy that you're scrambling to go and add. Steph had 30 with 9 rebounds, Clay had 38 and 4 with 7 triples, and Durant just the laid-back 19, 8 and 7. On to the Bulls, Nick Mirotic, 27 minutes, 24 and 6, 4 triples, 3 steals, 1 block. This guy is really, really good. I know I've been saying it for 4 years, but he's good and he's finally showing it. And hopefully he goes to an opportunity where he can play 30 a night and has a real chance of being a top 40 guy the rest of the way. That might be a stretch, but he's really good. Chrissy Dunn struggled a little bit, but ended up with 16, 5 and 4 with 3 steals, but went to the locker room, didn't return after smashing his mouth onto the court, ended up chipping his teeth and dislocating his 2 front teeth. However, that's possible. Cleared of a concussion, and he's going to be reevaluated Thursday. So that's important. If he misses, Jaren Grant would be the guy to get the value there. Lauri Markkanen had 11 and 8 in 29 minutes. Shout out to the Bulls announcers for saying that he's a young Kevin Durant. He's not. Sorry. While Zach LaVine struggled, 5 points on 12 shots. In 20 minutes, he's going to ramp his minutes up next game. There's going to be some rustiness, which is something that I talked about quite a lot, you know, as he returned back to the game, that there's going to be some poor performances. And Justin Holiday returned to chucker mode. 8 points on 12 shots, 6 rebounds with 2 triples. I still think that as LaVine goes from 20 to 30 minutes, that ten of those 10 minutes extra, 5 or 6 of them are going to come off Holiday, because Valentine offers something else with a little bit of creation. Now, he's not a great player, the Hammer, but he played 26 here and had 10, 7, and 7. And Nwaba provides the defense, 8 and 6 in 27 there for Nwaba. So Holiday, I think, is not going to be able to stick at this 35-minute mark that he's been playing. And Levine's minutes, even though they'll start together, he will lose a couple, 2 to 3, maybe 4 or 5, and that will it'll probably take him out of standard league calculations. I'm not certain on that, but I think there's a good chance of it. The Utah Jazz and the Sacramento Kings, the Jazz smacked them. Rocket Rodney Hood, after I talked about him at length yesterday, I'm not sure what to do with him. I don't know if he's ever going to be good. He comes out and he listens to the podcast, clearly. 25 points in 31 minutes, 4 triples, 8 rebounds, 2 assists and a steal. Now, I talked quite a bit yesterday in the player spotlight about Rocket, talking about how the shooting would come back. And it was fine here, 9 of 16. But the thing that has always bothered me is the fact that there was just no steals, no rebounds, no peripheral numbers. And that is what's most impressive about this, the 8 boards, the 2 steals. I have more faith in him shooting 56% in games than I do in him being able to maintain an 8 rebound, 2 steal rate. And that's what's going to keep him relevant. It's nice. You go and re-add him if you want, but I don't think that those sort of numbers are going to be consistent enough. He's more of a, I need points and threes, and let's treat him that way. The Don Mitchell was great. 34 points on 74% shooting. Just out of control, his accuracy with shots. 3 assists and 3 steals. Has been absolutely fantastic. Well, Jingling Joe bounced back. 14 points, 4 assists with 4 triples. His assist numbers have made him useful even when he's been going through some slumps. I still think that he is a 12-team league guy. While ravishing, Rick Rubio had 9.7 assists and 4 steals. I'm going to talk about him later on in the player spotlight. Derek Favors, 14 and 11 there. Stronghold until Gobert comes back. On to the Kings. We are focusing on youth. We are developing young players. We're going with the young players now. We're going to start resting veterans. So they decided to start Zach Randolph and George Hill in this game. After announcing that you are going with youth. George Hill came off the bench in that game before it was even announced, and so then you decide to bring him back into the starting lineup, decide to play him 37 minutes in this game, and he was good, no doubt about that. 20 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, and 4 triples. But it's just as confusing as anything. Kostas Koufos played his regular minutes, 22 minutes, while Georgios Papagiannis played 2. I don't understand it. Why is George Hill playing 37 minutes and Budrick Hield playing just 25? Now, I can't complain about the 39 that Bogdan played. I can't complain about the 37 that Willie Cauley-Stein played and had 26 and 10 with a steal and a block. And him and Bogdan are the clear must-owns, along with De'Aaron Fox, who had 36 minutes but wasn't good, 6-1 and 4. But Zach Randolph coming back in, he started because Scal Labissiere was out and had 12 and 4 with 2 steals and 2 triples. Their resting pattern, we're going to have absolutely no idea who plays and who doesn't in each game. In this one, it was Garrett Temple and Vince Carter who sat out. We have no idea how lineups are going to look. They will, I almost assuredly, change their starting lineup almost every single game. Guys will rest. It's really tough. Your own Bogdan, your own Willie, your own Foxy, and Hield and Scal are borderline 12-team league guys, whereas Hill and Randolph, they're just not going to play enough. But again, we haven't seen Hill played in both of these games so far, so we'll see if he sits the next one. You would have to assume that he does. But again, that is not a guarantee because this team is bad, they are terrible, and their development strategies are weird. The last game of the night, the Denver Nuggets and the LA Clippers. Speaking of bad decision making, there was no Blue Arrow, he was out with a concussion. So Farton Will Barton moved to starting point guard, and I've got no problem with that. He started at small forward in the last game, he went there and Baby Neck shifted back to the 3. But we go back to this bullshit lineup of Mason Plumlee and Nikola Jokic, and Jokic suffered as a result. 18 shots for 18 points with 8 rebounds, a steal, and a block, and the Nuggets lost. Good. I like Nuggets. I like the Nuggets. I like chicken Nuggets. I like all Nuggets. I like Denver. I like this team. I want them to be good, but when you make bad decisions, you deserve to lose. And yeah, the fact that you're in there, yeah, playing minutes with Fareed at center instead of Jokic is just nonsensical. Malone never learns. This is the bullshit that started last year. We had times last year when Jokic and Nurkic would start together and they'd both go off the floor and Fareed would come in and play at center and it made no sense. And we're seeing that sort of bullshit arise again. I don't know if this is just a one game thing or it's just because Murray was out, but let's hope that we don't have Plumlee and Jokic back together. Now, Plumlee played well, but he doesn't need to be force-fed the ball as he was in this and had 16 and 14 with 3 steals. That's a good line from Plumlee. There's no doubt about that. But why is he the primary option? That doesn't make sense. Gaz Harris, 19 points with 4 assists and 4 steals. Good. Farton Will Barton, 17, 6 and 6. Also good. Trey Lyles, not. 11 and 5 in 25 there for Trey. That's 3 consecutive turds for him. Yeah, he was a guy to own, no doubt, but it's trending in the wrong direction there. So if there's someone else that you want to grab off the wire and Lyles is your worst player, well, you can consider that a move to make. Also, shout out to Richard Jefferson playing 15 minutes. I don't know what Wancho has to do to get any playing time, but here it is. Milos Teodosic for the Clippers, 31 minutes for Milos, 15, 4, and 5, 3 steals and 3 triples. I believe he's a must-own player, and this is sort of why. Well, Wes Johnson had a weird one, 15 and 6 with 3 threes. He's more of a stream. Blakey Griffin, 20 and 12. Lou Williams, 17, 4, and 5. And with DeAndre Jordan out, Will Reed started, only 17 minutes because it's the table, Montrezl Harrell, who's getting the advantage there, 18 and 8 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. And DeAndre looks like he's going to be out for the next game as well. So adding in Harrell, if you can deal with his free throws, he was 6 of 13 and got hacked a lot in this one, he is the guy to go and add. Ty Wallace, decent again. Probably more of a 14-teamer, but 9 and 7, a steal, a block. He gets tons of blocks for a point guard, especially as he's playing small forward. But he has been putting up some pretty impressive numbers. Good old Ty Wallace. All right, that wraps it up for all of the action from what day? From Wednesday. Yep, that's the day. I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk DFS for Thursday with their 4 games, and we're going to shine that player spotlight. We're going to go back to Salt Lake City, and we're going to go to Ravishing Rick Rubio. I'm going to play another song by Con Etiquette. The song is called Almost Persuaded, and then I'm going to come back and do all that stuff that I just mentioned. guys. We're back, and let's go straight into the player spotlight. And we are going to be doing Ravishing Rick Rubio of the Utah Jazz. So let's talk about Rick, a guy who's been very disappointing in his time in Utah. He was a guy who I've been a very, very, very big fan of. As you said, I named him my sexiest player in the NBA earlier on, but even from a fantasy point of view, and for good reason, he's had four top 50 seasons over the past, so three top 50 seasons over the past 4 years, and that one season where he wasn't was the year that he played just the 22 games with the ankle injury, and he was 57th in that time, and going to a team who was offensively starved, we thought he could take on a bigger role, as he did down the stretch in Minnesota last year, started taking more shots and started hitting them. Well, one thing that has happened is his shooting has been a little bit better, maybe 39% from the field. He was at 40 last year, but his previous seasons had been 38, 37, 37, so a marginal improvement over some previous years, but overall, yeah, not ideal in that area and a bit of a regression from last season. But the biggest issue we've had with Rubio is his assist numbers. Last year, he averaged 11, 4, and 9 with 1.7 steals. This year, he's at 11 points. He's at 4 rebounds, so exactly the same there. But instead of 9.1 assists, he's at 4.7. So we're talking half the amount of assists. Steals are the same, your percentages are the same. So it's basically just that change in team, change in offense, change in role that is really impacting his value. Everything else, the same, just that big drop in assists. You know, half the assists drops his ranking from the 42nd ranked player last year to the 91st ranked one this year. Over the last month, he's outside the top 120, averaging 9.5, 4.5, and 4.5. And those numbers, they're just not good. But in a situation where you need assists and you need steals, he still can be owned. I don't have massive faith in him turning it around. Now, he's a guy, and I hold on to guys, you know, for a long period of time. But at this point, I think we just have to understand that this is Rubio's role. This is Rubio's role on this team, and very little is going to change. He has not had double-digit assists since the 25th of October. He had three games of 10 or more assists in the first five games of the season, and he has not had one of them since. That is not a... Last season, like we go back to the end of last year, he ended last season that in his last nine games, he had seven games of double-digit assists. He was racking up double-digit assists all through the year. So it is a big, big change. The steals are still okay. You get them in bunches, but that lack of assists is a real, real problem. So if you are, you know, if your assists are punting and you're not recovering from them, yeah, you move on. But yeah, five assists, almost two steals. There is some value there in certain builds, but in a 10-team league, I think you can move on. And in a 12-team league, in some cases, it just won't be worth holding on to him because, again, I don't think that a big change is coming. Yes, Rudy Gobert can come back, but I don't think that's really going to open up massive amounts for Rubio. It didn't, you know, change huge amounts at the start of the year. Yes, he had those first, you know, few games were good, but Gobert has played games in between then. It has been just a real change in his numbers. And we go back to basically the start of November. Everything really changed for Rubio since then. He had, at the start of November, it looked great. 9-5-10. Oh, sorry, start of October. This is from game one. 9-5-10. Great. 19-5-10. Fantastic. 16-6-5. Wrapped. 10-5-5. Lovely. 15-4-11. Great. 21-7-4. Cool. 22-6 with four steals. Love it. 30 points, five rebounds, one assist, two steals. Yeah, let's go, Rick. And then it just disappeared. And then everything just changed. And I don't exactly know why it was changed, but it has changed and it's persisted for 30 plus games. And I don't think it's going to change back. Now, as for Rubio, what's his future like? Does he get traded? I don't think that anyone's going to be taking him on at this point, to be honest. I don't think the Jazz will look to move him. I think he's going to stick here in Utah. If he did manage to go to another team that needs a starting point guard, then yeah, look, his assist numbers could roll back up if he's in this sort of scheme that suits him, but it's not. He hasn't been that in Utah, and I just don't see where the opportunity is. Now, I'd love to see him running in New Orleans instead of Rajon Rondo, but there's just no feasible way that I can see that happening. That would be an ideal situation for me to see him there doing that. But at this point, at the age of 27, I think we have to start thinking that Rubio might be transitioning into a backup point guard. And with news that Dante Exum could be returning post All-Star break, maybe he even loses a couple more minutes to Dante there, which would be a disaster for his overall value. This is the first non-injury season that Rubio is a negative in box score plus minus. It's his first season of his career that his on-off numbers are a negative as well. He's a guy that through his time in Minnesota, over his entire 353 games, there was a plus 6.3. This year in Utah, negative 11.3. So the team is much better with him on the bench than with him starting. And that's a significant level of decline there for Rubio. And it's not something where I'm thinking, much like Brook Lopez, I'm not really looking and going, well, you know, things are going to change, things are going to bounce back. I think that wherever Rubio goes after Utah, whether it's this season or next season, it'll be more in a backup role, and then he's going to have very little fantasy value. So if for some reason you can get top 70 value back in a trade in a dynasty, which I'd be stunned if you could, but if you could, I'd be willing to take that now, because I think you're just not going to get anything better, and it feels like the writing might be a little bit on the wall here for ravishing Rick Rubio, unfortunately, because I do like him, as you're obviously well aware. Let's now look at the perfect DFS lineups from Wednesday's games. On FanDuel, Pat Mills, 38.4. Georgie Hill, 41.3. Klay Thompson, 45.8. Rocket Rodney Hood, 43.6. And Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, 37.8. Yanni had 54, Porzingis had 58.8, and Mirotic had 44.7, while Hassan Whiteside had 59.6 for a total of 424, and that cost $59,900. On DraftKings, Pat Mills 39.5, Rocket had 44, Jermichael Green 43.75. The fact that he's listed as a small forward is laughable. LaMarcus Aldridge 51.5, Andre Drummond 57.75, Klay Thompson 50, Mirotic 44.50, the Montenegrin Alpha, and Hassan Whiteside at 56.25 for a total of 387.25, and that cost $49,800. Let's move into previewing these games for Thursday. The first one of these games that we're going to look at is the Orlando Magic. They are traveling to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Aaron Aflalo, we haven't heard news yet. He is going to be suspended. There is zero doubt about that. If you haven't heard as well, for the Rockets, Clippers issue, Trevor Ariza and Gerald Green both got suspended for two games. I don't think there's any way that Aflalo can escape this with under two. And if he gets away with it for under 10, I think he should consider himself extremely lucky. Iman Shumpert and Derek Rose were both originally thought to be questionable for this game, but the game notes came out late in the day and said that they were both out, so it seems unlikely. But again, yesterday, the Thunder's game note said that Andre Robertson was out, and then he ended up starting. So we take that with a level of a grain of salt. Not that it's going to have really any impact on DFS with Shumpert and Rose. At point guard, Isaiah Thomas is at 5,700. That's an appealing price. It's a great matchup. We know point guards against Orlando have been able to put up really, really good numbers. So Thomas at that price, absolutely on a four-game slate, should be in your tournament lineup or in your tournament pool anyway. And on the other side, point guards against the Cavs have done pretty well. And Lord Alfred Payton is at 6,700. Now, he has seen his minutes drop in a few of these recent games. But in games where he's had good matchups, he's actually produced value generally. So I think he should be in your tournament pool as well. DJ Augustin, maybe you want to throw him in there. He's at 4,200. He had 33 in that last game, taking those minutes off Payton, but I don't feel super great about that one. At shooting guard, the plumber, J.R. Smith, no. Dwayne Wade, 5,200. Great matchup for Wade-O. Tournaments only, though, while Evan Fournier at 5,700. Normally, I'd say he'd be a tournament-only guy, but on a limited slate, I think you can feel pretty good about a cash play for Fournier of getting you at least 27, which is not a bad sort of number. At small forward, John Simmons is at 4,500. I think he's bad. I don't think he's good at all. But limited slate, he is a GPP sort of a player. Whereas you got the other bloke,
LeBron James.
He's at 12,500. Now, we know LeBron's good. We know he's got a comfortable ability to get to 60 here, which would make him cash in a lot of situations. But with four games on, can you find enough lower price guys to get LeBron into a cash lineup that you feel confident about? And that's why I'd probably think he's more of a tournament guy at that elevated price. But of course, if you can find enough cheap guys to fit in around him, then he's absolutely a cash guy. We're all well aware of that. Mario Hezonja at 4,300, probably a little bit high, but he does have that 25 point upside, which is not bad, but probably still not where it needs to be. At power forward, Azza Gordon, 7,500. The shot is way, way off tournament for him, but definitely not for cash. And Kevin Love, we'll go Kevin Love in a sec. Jay Crowder and Jeff Green, both under 4,000. Maybe, but I just don't really see it. But if you're going to take one of those guys, it'd be Green to me, which is a weird thing to say, but he has that ability to drop a random 35 on someone's head and make you go, huh, Jeff Green, huh? Center, Kevin Love, 7,500. It's getting to a sort of a place where you might be interested, especially against a team like the Magic. I'm definitely not looking at him in cash, but he is still averaging 35 across the last three games with Thomas in for two of those three. But still, the cash value there is pretty limited. Ken Birch went big in that last one, but we don't know if he is going to play over Mo Spates or if Spates is going to play at all, so he's a tough one to use, but GPP, you could always do it. Well, Bismack Biyombo has risen to 7,500. I don't think that Bismack Biyombo is going to produce that sort of value in a matchup against the Cavs. He's been great, but I think that is a big amount, and it's not a big amount that I'd be willing to pay for. On DraftKings, some more cashy options over there. Isaiah Thomas at 57, I think he's really strong for cash, but LeBron at 11.3, that's great. I'm all about LeBron on DraftKings. I love that for cash. Tournaments, a similar bunch of guys. Fournier, Lord Alfred Payton, Az Gordon, yeah, Kevin Love, you could throw in there as well. Well, Bismack Biyombo's gone up, but he's only up to 6,200, so that feels a little bit more reasonable and definitely something that I could consider even in a cash-type situation. All right, let's move on to the next game. We're going to look at the 76ers. They are taking on the Boston Celtics again. Will we get a Marcus Morris, Ben Simmons punch on again? Let's see. The Celtics are dealing with a bunch of illnesses. Gershon Yabesele, Abdul Nadir, and Marcus Smart are all sick, while Kyrie Irving is dealing with a sore left shoulder. All four of those blokes are listed as questionable. Of course, if Smart and Kyrie are both out, then that opens up tons of minutes for Terry Rozier and for Shane O'Larkin. So there are going to be some minutes there. You're going to get a bump for Jaylen Brown. You're going to get a bump for Jason Tatum. You're probably going to get a bump for Semi Ojeleye as well. And Marcus Morris might be forced to play a little bit more of the three. So there's going to be some weird stuff that goes on in this game. We know that Markel Fultz is out. We know that Rashawn Holmes is out for Philadelphia. And of course, we know that JJ Redick is out for at least the next 2 weeks, with Jared Bayless likely to start. Now, Bayless is a minimum salary player who's likely to get around 30 minutes, and that makes him, at minimum salary, someone you can throw in. He's been wholly unproductive this season and has yet to crack 30 points in a game, even though he has had multiple 30-minute games. But he is someone that, at minimum salary, if he gets you a 25, that's good value. And that is the sort of player that can enable you to potentially put LeBron into a cash situation. TJ McConnell being good lately, 5,100. I like using him here. While Kyrie at 8.2, if he plays, I think that's a strong, strong cash play. If he plays, of course. While Rozier at 4,000, we're smashing that. And again, that opens up LeBron. If Kyrie and Smart are out, that opens up that big 12.5 on LeBron to get Rozier in there. At shooting guard, Marcus Smart's at 5,700. Been putting up some okay numbers. If he is in and Kyrie is out, I think that's worth exploring, but otherwise it's probably something to hold off on. Small forward, Bob Cove's at 5,300 and just not doing anything at all at the moment. Maybe a tournament guy, but that's literally it. While Jaylen Brown at 5,700, feel good about that for cash. And that can only be improved upon if Kyrie and or Smart happen to be out. At power forward, Dario Saric is at 5,300. That just seems completely bonkers, that price. That, to me, is a cash lock. I love that price on FanDuel. Well, Benny Simmons at 8,300 has been a little bit down. Had 35 in that London game against Boston, but I think he's not bad to use for cash, but far from a lock. Jason Tatum at 5,200 has been a little bit hit or miss lately, but I think at that value, with the potential of guys sitting out, gives him some cash reliability. Marcus Morris at 47, probably more of a tournament sort of a player. Vanilla Tice, Amir Johnson, Trevor Booker. If I'm going to throw anyone out there, it's probably Tice as a tournament guy at 3,800. For the centers, Joel Embiid's at 10,000. I absolutely fine using him in cash. Again, it's a $12,500 saving over a guy like LeBron, so that could be a way to spend some money. While Al Horford at 7.4, I also think is a strong 35-point floor type of lock, which is a really good player to use at that sort of a salary. On DraftKings for this game, a whole bunch of guys are like for cash and tournaments. Embiid's at 94, Simo is at 79, Kyrie's at 83, Al Horford at 7,000, I love, and TJ McConnell. Timothy Johns at 4,400. I love that. That, to me, is a real lineup starter. Yeah, Saric, not quite as good on DraftKings at 6,100. Brown and Tatum, similar sort of values to what we're talking about with FanDuel. Jared Bayless, not a minimum guy, so at 4,200, a lot of his appeal is taken away. And, of course, we smash Rozier if both Irving and Smart happen to be out. In fact, even if just one of them's out, I would be playing Rozier more so on FanDuel, but definitely as a DraftKings option. The next game, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Houston Rockets, have talked about already. Trevor Ariza and Gerald Green are both suspended for this game and for Saturday's game against the Warriors. Jim Harden has been upgraded to probable with his hamstring issue, and you would think that he is ready to play, but not full minutes, so it looks like he is going to be ready to go. We also need to check on the status of Nene. If he is out, that's Tariq Black. But the one that's interesting here is Troy Williams. With Green out, with Trevor Ariza out, someone has to play the three, and Williams could be in line for minutes. And if he is out, now if he's in, I don't really care. But if he is out, that could mean big minutes for PJ Tucker, big minutes for Luke Marmute, 44 minutes for Eric Gordon. It could mean a stack for these guys. So there's a lot. You know, if Williams is out, it seems dumb. But if he is out, then it opens up tons of value for these other options on the Houston Rockets. At point guard, Chrissy Paul's at 10-4. The return of Jim Harden at 10-4. Probably fading Chris Paul there. I just think there are better options to spend up with Harden around. And on the flip side, Jeffy Teague's at 6,800.
My name is Jeff.
I think at 6,800, he's a tournament guy. I'm not really ready to go in for cash at him at that price. At shooting guard, Wigo, 6,200.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Yep. Never want to go with him for cash. It is a decent matchup for Wigo here, but a tournament sort of guy. He's got the 50 upside, but he's probably like a 20 floor, which is not a great idea. Eric Gordon at 6,800. I'm really, really in on that. It's an $800 price dip. Yeah, I know Harden's back, but with Ariza out, we're going to see Harden, Paul, Gordon lineups and the potential of Green's out, and then Williams potentially being out. And unless they're relying heavily on RJ Hunter, and this is Mike D'Antoni, so they won't be, then Eric Gordon could be in line for, you know, 38, 40 minutes, which could really, really work. Now, he might not have the ball in his hands enough, but I like him at that sort of a salary. Jim is at 10-5 at a tournament. Sure, we know how good he is. That's a great price, but will he play 35 minutes or will he be easing in at 25? I think 25 is more realistic, so therefore it's tough to use. It's impossible to use him in cash. Jim Butler at 10,000, that's a fairly big price hike, but on the limited slate, he is in play for cash and for tournaments as well. While PJ Tucker at 37, even if he plays 40 minutes, he might not get to 20 points, but he could also have one of those random games where he drops a 30, and that would be great. So he is a tournament guy, while Marmute, listed as a power forward, he's a minimum salary guy as well, and also becomes a tournament player. Gorgui Dieng, no. Taj Gibson, 56. I think that's a strong cash play with limited tournament upside. At center, Clint's at 7,500, going up against Karl Anthony Towns. I think that Capella is a fade unless Nene is out. And if Nene is out, then I think Capella is worth looking at. Whereas Townsie at 9,200, I like that. I'd be happy to use that in cash and in tournaments. Over on DraftKings, Chrissy Paul at 9.5, Jim Butler at 88, and Townsie at 9.1. I like all of those for cash and for tournaments, along with Eric Gordon at 63, whereas Teague and Wiggins are both tournament sort of guys, 5,800 and 63 for Wigo and Teague, respectively. Let's go on to the last game of the night. It is the Pacers and the Trail Blazers. The Blazers are favored by 3.5. The total is 213.5 points here at point guard. Corey Joseph's at 4,300. The numbers have been okay for him, but I just don't really like him at that sort of a salary. He's just not a very high upside sort of a player. Love Dame at 9.4 here, all about him, while Shabazz Napier at 4,400. Production's been okay for him lately, but I don't feel super good about him getting there. I just don't feel confident in the floor with Napier. Daz Collison at 53, yeah, I think his floor's low, I think his ceiling's low, so that's a fade. Shooting guard Vic Oladipo, 9,300. Yeah, great for cash. I feel really good about his minimum levels. He's got massive upside. Like him a lot. Well, CJ McCollum at 8,300. Yeah, I know CJ's been playing well, but I feel like that's too expensive. Although, he averages 45 against the Pacers. A different team, of course. Had 47 in, or 46 in his last outing. There's a tournament upside value there, but I don't really feel great about it. Small forward Evan Turner, that's nothing for me. Lancey Stevenson at 49 is also a fade. Bojan Bogdanovic, not interested. At power forward, Eddie Davis, minimum salary. He played 20 minutes in the last game. The minutes are on the way up, and he can have the occasional big game. So that makes him a tournament guy in a matchup which would suit him. While Domas Sabonis, $6,000. I like that for cash. I'm not really in hugely for tournaments, but there is some cash value there. Well, Thaddeus at 5,800, same cash value, tournaments not too much. The Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes may be good, sometimes may be shit.
Yep, but he's been okay lately, and this is an okay matchup, so I'm all about using him in tournaments. Probably not ready to go for cash at that price, but I don't think it's a completely wrong decision. At center, Yusuf Nurkic is at 6,500 because he has been poor lately, but that in a great matchup, a great opportunity, in a low ownership situation, I think he's a very, very good tournament play. Al Jefferson's at 4,000. That's probably a little bit high. Over there on FanDuel, on DraftKings. I like Oladipo at 85 and Lillard at 87, Sabonis at 6,000 and Aminu at 5,000. All those guys are cash and tournament guys. McCollum and Nurkic more GPP plays, although McCollum you could sneak in to a cash lineup. And Thaddeus at 53 is a cash only sort of a guy, much as I described over on FanDuel. Let's have a look at the other sites on Yahoo for some tournament action. Kyrie, Isaiah Thomas, Corey Joseph, Jared Bayless, Al Jefferson, Jeff Green, DJ Augustine. And for cash and tournaments, it's Rozier, Jaylen Brown, The Chief, Thaddeus Young, TJ McConnell, Clint Capella, Aaron Gordon, Ben Simmons, Victor Oladipo, and Jim Butler. On Moneyball for tournaments, Azza Gordon, Clint Capella, Lord Alfred, The Chief, Jason Tatum, Ed Davis, Jared Bayless. And for cash, it's Fournier, it's Gibson, it's Jaylen Brown, Šarić, Timothy John McConnell, Al Horford, Isaiah Thomas, Lillard, Towns, Oladipo, Butler, Embiid, and LeBron James. And on Draft Stars, don't play the target. Joel Embiid for a tournament, Victor Oladipo tournament, Isaiah Thomas, Lord Alfred Payton, Andrew Wiggins, Chief, Evan Turner, Al Jefferson, Kyle Korver. And for cash games, Fournier, McConnell, Biyombo, Sabonis, Eric Gordon, Jim Butler, and Chris Paul. Don't forget to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Twitter at LockedOnNBANet. Follow me, Josh Lloyd, the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster. Follow me on Twitter at RedRock_Beeble and follow the Basketball Monster Twitter account at BaskMonster. If you are watching this on YouTube, subscribe and give a thumbs up and leave a comment and let me know what you think of the, the changed look, the facelift, the makeover that that Scott provided for the show. So thank you to Scott for doing that. Let me know what you think of the graphics. Hopefully we iron out some of the issues that were there on today's show with it. You can leave a 5-star review. That would be awesome. Do that on Apple Podcasts. You can also find it on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Greg Popovich.